Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to What You Read Next podcast. Today, I have a fun author interview with USA Today bestseller author, Abby Jimenez. Abby is a Food Network winner, and she has published two of my favorite books in 2019. She knows how to write a heartfelt rom-com. I really love the Friend Zone and the Happy Ever After playlist. In this interview, we chat about her writing process, her books, and of course, her round of book recommendations. Now let's get to the interview. Hi, Abby. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a author, and it's kind of funny because now this actually feels like it's my second job, but I own several cupcake shops. I'm a self-taught pastry chef and Food Network winner, and I own a bakery that I founded called Nadia Cakes. So I do that. That's my day job. And then the writing is my slash hobby slash new full-time adventure, I guess you can say. It takes up a lot of my time. It's like all encompassing, and it's not like a 9-to-5 job. It's like an all the time, every day thing.
Mm-hmm. I think both, just managing both. I think it's like, and along with having a family. So it's just a lot.
Yeah. I've got three kids, and I have three kids, and then I also have a stepson. Mm-hmm. He's older and he lives in California. And then I've got four dogs. So my life is very, very, very busy.
So when do you have time to write?
I write on my cell phone, so that really helps. Every time I tell people that, there's like a collective gasp, like, what? But I do write a lot of my books on my cell phone because it makes it really accessible to me. I don't have to have my laptop open in front of me. I can be sitting in a car outside of my kid's school waiting for them, or I can be even like in a line at the grocery store. So I do, that provides me a lot of flexibility. So that helps me get stuff done. But yeah, I write on my phone. And then I do have like my system for how I, like carve out time to do serious edits or try and power through like a lot, high word counts. Mm-hmm. And my rule is that I never write before 12 o'clock noon because I need to wake up and like have my coffee and have something to eat. So I'll like plan a day that I'm going to sit down and write, and then I'll do all my morning stuff. And then 12 o'clock, that's when I sit down and I actually start focusing on trying to finish my writing projects.
That's really interesting to see. Like, you're not a morning person to write, but you're later on in the day and you give yourself the space to do it as opposed to waiting for the news to come in.
Yeah, I think like a lot of being successful in life in general is just kind of knowing, like, working smarter and not working harder. And for me, that's not writing before 12 o'clock noon, because every time I do, I end up having to do a ton of edits and properly wake for a few hours. And I've learned my lesson.
Yeah.
So
yeah, just trust your process. I think each person has their ideal time. I think in some ways we try to make ourselves, because we read other people are successful by writing at 4 o'clock in the morning or doing X, Y, Z. And you realize like, oh, I should do this. And then you realize that's not your rhythm. That's not your ideal time. And so it's like knowing.
Yeah. It's not even about like quantity. It's about quality. You know what I mean? Because if you do it half-assed, you're just going to end up having to redo it. Mm-hmm. So
just create more work.
Yeah. You make more work for yourself. Mm-hmm. So I just, I've got my system down. I know it works for me now. Mm-hmm. And I write primarily in my bedroom on my bed.
Oh, I love it.
Which my hips don't love. Every time I have like a long writing session, my hips are so sore because like the bed is squishy, it's like, it's not the best platform to like place your body. But that's what I do. That's my space.
That's your office. That's where the magic happens.
That is my office. I always get jealous. Like, I see these authors and they show like their office, you know, they pan on this beautiful room with all these creative photographs on the wall and bookshelves. And I'm like, that's not at all like where I'm writing. Like my bedroom looks like the bedroom. It's funny because my house, like the main floor of my house, it's very nice. You can take a picture in there, but my bedroom looks like the bedroom of like an 18-year-old boy in his first year of college. Like seriously, it's just not at all cute. Like we are not grown-ups in our bedroom. It's funny. We have this chair that my husband likes to sit on that we've owned since I think before we were even married. It's like this ratty folding chair from Target. I mean, and this is my bedroom. That's where I'm writing. And I could get better furniture, but I don't know. I just don't like, it just feels like too much work for a place that only I see. So this is my glamorous writing space and it's covered in little dogs. There's like dogs all over the bed while I'm up there.
I love it. I think it's like amazing just to acknowledge what works for you and at the same time to realize like there's no need. If you don't want to change it, don't change it if it's working.
Yeah, do you. Don't feel like you have to keep up with anybody else.
Yeah, I think that's like a big, you know, I think with social media, we want to keep up with like the Joneses, want to have this perfect Instagram life. And the reality is like, you know, messy spaces are Instagrammable now. So like, it's all good. It's like, you just had to do you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very important. I do wish that my space was more like aesthetically pleasing, but I don't want to do it. That's the thing. Like, I don't want to be the one to have to go and buy furniture and move things and redecorate. No, I don't have time for that.
Yeah. You'll get it done. If you ever feel inspired to get it done, you'll get it done. If you don't, then that's fine too. So there's like no shame around it.
Yeah. Maybe when my kids are in college or something and I have more time on my hands.
Yeah. Like right now you have a full schedule. Like you're managing a business. You're actually, you know, you're writing, you have kids, you have four dogs. It's a lot. So
it is a lot. It is a lot.
Yeah. So,
but I'm having fun. I'm having so much fun.
That's important. So if you're having fun, if you feel like you're in alignment, it feels like everything's like falling into place, then that's where you need to be. Yeah. You founded Nadia's Cake in 2007. So you've been OG of the cupcake world for a while.
Yeah, it was actually back in 2007. And yes, I started Nadia Cakes out of my house. So I had a full-time job. I was a retail manager and I loved it. I was very good at it. And I ended up getting pregnant on accident with my third baby in 3 years. And I simultaneously lost my job. And I was like, absolutely devastated. I'm one of those people that I never wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. I never, that wasn't what was going to make me feel fulfilled. Like my identity was my job. Mm-hmm. I loved like coming into work and having my successes. And, you know, I liked that. And then I lost all of that and found myself, like 8 months pregnant and stuck with my two infants at home. So I think I can honestly tell you, this is probably the only time in my entire life that I felt actually depressed. Like, I think I was like clinically depressed during this time. I was trying to pull myself out of this funk and like try and stay positive, but I mean, we couldn't afford for me to stay home. So we didn't know what we were going to do. Like, there was no way. We couldn't live off of one paycheck. And in the area that we lived in, it was 60 miles north of Los Angeles. The jobs up there don't pay as much as they pay. We call this down below, like in the LA area. Mm-hmm. But the commute is like an hour and a half each way to get down to LA. And then to put three children into daycare, it was going to end up being more than I was going to make. So we were really in a place where we didn't know what we were going to do. Mm-hmm. And I was very depressed. I was super in my dark place. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go and I'm going to take a cake decorating class at Michael's because it's something I've always wanted to do. And I never had the time because I worked 60 hours a week. And so I went and I took this cake decorating class and I loved it. And I took 2.5 of the three courses that they offered. And then I had to drop out of the third one to have my baby. And when I was home with my infant, I was like, you know, what if I started a little cake decorating business out of my house? Mm-hmm. You know, just to like pay the bills while I figure out what I'm going to do. So I got this like horrible and like these super cheesy business cards. Like when I look back at them, I'm like, ew. And started Nadia Cakes out of my house. And I did that for 2 years. And it was absolutely exhausting. Like it was the hardest 2 years of my entire life. I had a newborn, a 1-year-old and a 2-year-old. I had a full-time cake business out of my house. And I incidentally, much like my writing schedule, I had a rule that I would not do anything cake related before 12 o'clock noon. So I would wake up with my girls in the morning and I would make them a hot breakfast. I would give everybody baths. I would clean the house. I would take a shower. And then at 12 o'clock, that's when I started doing my cake stuff. And I would decorate from 12 o'clock noon until 12 o'clock midnight. I did all the orders. I did all the baking. I did all the decorating. I did all the billing. I did all the consultations, all the deliveries. I did what it now takes 4 full-time people to do in my bakery. I did that by myself while I had 3 infants at home.
Oh my God.
And I had severe, yeah, it was a nightmare. I tell you, it was awful. And I had severe carpal tunnel in both hands at the time. So all night long, I would wake up and shake my hands out because my hands were tingling because I had nerve damage. And I wasn't charging enough for my cakes. I didn't have the confidence to charge, quite honestly, what they were worth. And I was still, setting up the business. So like somebody would place a cake order and I would undercharge for it. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have to go out and buy the pan because I didn't have everything, and I'd have to buy all the materials. And then, by the time I was done filling this order, I was probably making like a couple bucks and we started sinking into debt. Mm-hmm. And in the 2 years that I worked out of my house, we ended up allocating $18,000 worth of credit card debt, just paying for groceries and like living our lives. It was, it was not sustainable and it was very scary. And my husband was like, why don't we open up a bakery, like an actual, like, real life bakery. And I had just had surgery for the carpal tunnel on my hands. And it kind of made me have like a full stop, where like I couldn't decorate because my hands were recovering. And, I had to like look around at my life and be like, is this really what I want to keep doing? I mean, I was chronically exhausted, like the physical toll that it was taking on my body was ridiculous. And I was very scared. I am very much not a risk taker. I'm more of like, if you push me off the cliff, I'll figure out how not to get hurt on the way down, but like, I'm not going to jump, Mm-hmm. And my husband found this retail space and it was like, it used to be Juice It Up or something. And it was all like wires hanging down from the ceiling. And the previous tenants took the light bulbs, I mean, they took everything. It was like, the place was wrecked inside and I didn't have the vision for it at all. And he just kept saying like, we can do this. So finally I agreed, okay, let's open up this bakery. And we went down to the bank to get a loan and we couldn't get a loan. The banks, this was like during the 2009 financial crisis. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up charging the entire opening of our first bakery. It was $136,000 on our credit cards.
Oh my gosh.
So for 5 months, yeah. Like, how credit card companies give you those advance checks? Like, you can write this advance check and 0% interest for 12 months. So we had really good credit, obviously. And we had a bunch of, credit cards with high limits. And so we literally sat down in our bed and we took all of those advance checks and we wrote out every single one. And we had to do it all at once because we knew as soon as the credit card companies saw that we were charging up our cards, that they would cut our credit limits. Mm-hmm. So we charged up every single one. And for the next 5 months, I paid the minimum balance, like the minimum payment on $136,000 worth of credit card debt. So you just like do that math in your head. It was insane. Like who does this, right?
Yeah.
And we opened up our bakery in Palmdale, California to instant success. Like all the people that came out when I was working out of my house, all the clients that I met, because I had a huge client roster. I think I had over 300 clients.
Oh my gosh.
Over those 2 years. Yeah. And I mean, like, imagine like you're coming to my house to place your cake order, and I've got my kids running around and maybe you brought your kids and we're holding each other's kids while we're talking about your cake. Like I built, really lasting loyal relationships with these people. In fact, I met my best friend working out of my house. I don't remember meeting her because I was so tired when I met her that I don't actually remember it happening. But I built these really loyal customers and all these people came. When I opened my bakery, there was like a line wrapped around the building and it went on for weeks. And like we didn't hire enough staff like we thought we did, but we were way busier than what we had anticipated. Mm-hmm. And I told my husband, like, you got to quit your job. Like, I can't keep doing this by myself. You've got to quit your job. So 3 weeks after we opened the bakery, my husband, who had the only stable paycheck, the only source of our benefits, our 401k plan, mm-hmm. quit his job and came to work at Nadia Cakes. Mm-hmm. And that was huge because he's a very smart businessman. He became the CFO of the company and got all of our credit card debt consolidated. We just celebrated our 10-year anniversary for our brick and mortar store in our Palmdale location. Mm-hmm. 10 years later, we still have our very first employee who we ever hired. We have paid off all of our debt. We have 3 locations now in 2 states. We have 1 location in Woodbury, Minnesota, and Maple Grove, Minnesota. And then, of course, our Palmdale location is still doing really great. We just signed another 5-year lease in that store. So, and then we, of course, went on a bunch of Food Network shows. So I went on Cupcake Wars and I won. I was on Cupcake Wars twice. We did 2 seasons of Fabulous Cakes on TLC. Aaron Campbell, the manager for our Woodbury location, went on Next Food Network Star and made it to the top 5. And then she won the Holiday Baking Championship. So we've had a lot of really amazing successes as bakery owners. And it's been a ton of fun, just a ton of fun. Like I've had the best decade ever.
Aww. Yeah, I saw your list of this decade and I was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. You had a great decade. You had a bestseller, you opened stores, you went to the Food Network, you won. So that was a great decade. And the next one.
Yeah, and it's like exhausting when I think about it. I'm like, how did I do? God, I'm like tired even telling the story. How did I do all this? But you know, you do it because you have to. Mm-hmm. You know, you do it because like a lot of what I did, I had no choice. Like I didn't want to work out of my house with 3 screaming children in diapers and sometimes my stepson, you know, like 4 kids. Like that's crazy. Like the people that do stuff like that, they have a bakery or they have a full-time daycare, you know, but you do what you have to do.
Yeah. You just make it work. So I got a question because you mentioned you were in LA or California, and you are now based in Minnesota. And this is more a personal question for me is like, how did you make the transition? Because I am actually planning to move out of where I'm at to a brand new city. And so I'm always curious to hear when you relocate, like what it's like what were some of the challenges around that?
Yeah. So that was another crazy, like, oh my gosh, are you serious type story. So, it was about a year and a half, 2 years after we opened the first bakery and we were looking to open another location, but we didn't want to do it in California. We wanted to live somewhere where there were seasons. We wanted to live somewhere, where like, you know, had a really great school system. We don't want to have to put our kids into private school and it's just everything in California is so expensive.
Yeah.
And so we were like, well, my husband, he's always the one that's like suggesting these crazy things. And I'm always the one he's got to like talk off a ledge and convince me to do his nutso ideas. He was like, why don't we move out of state? And I was like, that's super scary. No. And he's like, yeah, let's take a cross country trip and let's just go look, you know? So it was the summer and it was the summer of 2011 and we took a 5-week cross country trip. We knew we didn't want to live anywhere hot because we'd already done that. Palmdale's in, you know, the high desert. It gets to be like 115 up there. So we drove through the middle of the country and then came back through the top. And we drove through Minnesota and my husband had worked for Room and Board prior to him quitting to run Nadia Cakes and they home office in Minnesota and everybody there was always so nice and they were always talking about how beautiful it is. So we kind of came to Minnesota knowing that we were going to take like a hard look at this state and we got here and it was during this epic heat wave. Like I will never forget how freaking hot it was. Like we would get out of the car and my kids' glasses would all fog up because that's how steamy it was outside. And I was like, I thought this place was supposed to be cold. I mean, granted it was like August or something, but it was really hot. And I've lived here now for 8 years. And to this day, I don't think I've ever felt it this hot here.
Okay.
So we get to Minnesota in the middle of this heat wave and we really like it. It's beautiful. You know, we start Googling like the schools and just the public schools are really fabulous. They're very small and like kind of like, you know, small town type schools. And and there was like no cupcake shops here. It was weird. You know, it's like you go to California and there's Sprinkles and there's Gigi's and there's a, you know, a score of cupcake shops on every corner. But in Minnesota, there was really no cupcake shops. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, we spent 3 days here and we were like, yeah, we like it. Let's do it. So we got home, packed up our house that we owned and we had lived in for 8 years, packed up this house. And 3 months later, we moved to Minnesota in the winter. And we didn't know anyone. We didn't have any friends or family here, like nobody. Like we literally just pulled up to this house that you're renting, like in the middle of December, and moved here. And then we started the process of opening up our second location. And we ended up loving our neighbors so much that we bought the house that we are renting because we never wanted to move. Like we wanted to live next to these people forever. And they're, we have such great friends here. I mean, we go on vacations with these people. Our kids are growing up together. It's just amazing. And I love living here. Like, I know I talk about writing in my, you know, horribly decorated bedroom. Mm-hmm. However, I do have a very big window that overlooks an absolutely beautiful wooded backyard that have mm-hmm. deer running through it. I mean, it's just gorgeous here. So that's how we made the move. And we opened up two shops here, one in 2012 and then another one 3 years after that. Mm-hmm. And I shamelessly mention all my shops in my books.
Mm-hmm. I love
like
that.
Every book. Like you can, yeah, because like, you know, mama didn't raise no fool. You know, I got to cross promote here. Yeah. And people crack up when they see it. They're like, yeah, I love the shameless plug. I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to like not promote my other book. I sell my books in my shop and I sell my shops in my books. And that's how it's going
to
be.
I love it. Yeah. I'm planning to go to LA. My best friend's moving to LA. And so I'm probably going to try to go to the California store. I was like, it's in the book. It's like, it just tells me where I need to go next. But yeah. So.
Yeah. It's in all the books. Every single book is going to have a shameless Nadia Cakes plug. And you know, what's funny, just to show you that, you know, plugging real businesses actually works mm-hmm. in the friend zone. I mention, this brewery in South Dakota, Wooden Legs Brewery. Mm-hmm. Josh, the main character, is wearing a shirt from Wooden Legs Brewery. And when I was writing the book, you know, my character is from South Dakota. And I was like, where would Josh, like, you know, every opportunity to describe things in a character's life is an insight into who they are as a person. So if you're going to put a shirt on a character, you know, make it a shirt that would be something he'd be into, right? Like, you know, a film festival shirt or like the shirt of his favorite band or whatever. And I thought, you know, what Josh would like is he would like a family run, like, you know, hometown brewery. Mm-hmm. So I just Googled brewery, South Dakota, and I picked this random brewery and I Googled their merchandise and they had a black shirt. Mm-hmm. And I wrote that into the book. And that brewery has sold hundreds of these shirts since the book has come out, because now that's like the sexiest book in fiction or the sexiest shirt in fiction, because it's the shirt that Josh wears when he meets Kristen and he wears it during their wedding. Mm. And they sell this shirt and they ship it nationwide. So it's really cool. It's like, you know, it's become a thing, but you know, it has real life implications when you mention a place in a book. So I try to do that in all of my books, not just my places. I mention real places in every book.
Yeah, I like when authors do that. Like, I lived in New York for the past 14 years, and I love whenever there's a mention of a New York landmark or New York bar, New York specific thing, because then I'm like, oh, I know that place. And, you know, it'll be interesting. Like, I'm moving to Miami, and so hopefully I'll find books that are set in Miami so I can actually find different places to check out. I think as a reader, it makes it a more engaging experience. It's like, you can actually think about the book in real life, and you can try it. You can be, like, the character.
Yeah, on the Happy Ever After playlist, the outfitter in Ely, Minnesota that Jason's family owns mm-hmm. is a real outfitter. And I called them and I said, you know, this is where my husband and I, this is the place my husband and I used on the many trips we've taken into the Boundary Waters. And I asked mm-hmm. him, can I use your outfitter in my book and pretend that it's like the family, you know, business? And he's like, sure, use it. So that's a real place too. You can actually go there and like, you know, explore the pristine wilderness of the Boundary Waters canoe area.
I love it. And your future books are set in Minnesota, right?
Yes. So book number two, the Happy Ever After playlist, is mostly in California because the main character, Sloan, is from Canoga Park, California, which is a place that I worked and lived at one point in my life. And then Jason is from Ely, Minnesota. And then book three, because I have a three-book deal, book three has like tiny little tidbits in St. Paul, Minnesota, but the bulk of the book takes place in the fictional town of Blythe, South Dakota. And then book four, because I'm working on a fourth book, takes place in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Ooh, so we got places to visit. This is exciting.
Yes. Yeah. And all the books are really fun. And they're all so different. Like they're all so different. I mean, you know, cause you've read them both. You've read the two that are available for reading right now. But you know, my characters are just, every single one of them is different. And you get, and I love world building. You know, I love creating these like universes and like these places that these characters enjoy.
Yeah, I felt like your books transported me to a different setting, and it was just addicting just to read, because there's just like a sense of like you just get lost in this world where the characters are living, breathing, eating, doing, sleeping, doing all these different things, and just exciting, the whole process. Like it was a great world building within a romance.
Yeah, and I really know my characters, and you know, if you were in my discussion group, I have a discussion group called the Friend Zone by Abby Jimenez discussion group on Facebook. If you're in my discussion group and you ask me about any character, because a lot of my readers are like, you know, what about Sean or what about, I know the full backstory for every single character. Mm-hmm. Like I completely understand, like even my side characters, I understand them as people, like on just a super deep level. Mm-hmm. So I hope that comes through in my writing, because you know, I know them. I have a deep, intimate knowledge of them. And not just the main characters, the side characters as well. Mm-hmm. Like I could write the love story for any of my side characters. I'm not going to. I get a lot of requests for, you know, for say, for example, for Lola from the Happy Ever After playlist, people want Lola's story, but I know her backstory and I know what her love story would look like. I just don't know if I have like the emotional wherewithal to write it, because she would be a difficult character to write. Mm-hmm. I think it would be very like emotionally taxing, mentally taxing to live inside of her head. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Lola's an interesting character. She has so much stuff and so much like emotional roller coaster. Like I foresee Lola's story is very angsty, you know, and emotional. And sometimes you need that, sometimes you need something a little lighter or something, I don't know, a little different than that. So.
Yeah, you know, it's always easiest when you have a character who maybe has the same kind of thought processes that you do, or the thought process of someone very close to you, because then it's easy to just let it flow out of you, you know, because you know how that person's going to respond to any given situation, you know how they're going to behave, you know, and when you step outside of that and you're writing somebody that isn't really the kind of person you are, it's much more difficult, you know, like you really got to think about it. And I find that kind of writing hard to do, you know, obviously it's stilting and it's almost like you have to become like a method actor or something to try and figure out how to write that character. Mm-hmm. So I prefer the books that just flow out of me, you know, that are easier to write. And so far that's what I've been successful with. And the books that just kind of flow out of me, I find that I have to do less and I prefer that.
So now let's talk about Happily Ever After playlist and the Friend Zone. So you have mentioned in the past that Happy Ever After playlist was the first book that you wrote, and then you end up writing the backstory of the Friend Zone and getting, you know, the polishing, you know, in reverse. Let's talk about like what was the reasoning why. I know that you had Happy Ever After done, and then you knew the events of the Friend Zone were going to happen. You know, you saw that coming. So what inspired you to write the Friend Zone?
So I'll back up a little bit. Yeah. So the way that I got my writing start was I actually wrote this really terrible YA dystopian
Ooh.
Book. It was, okay. It was awful. Oh my God. It's so terrible. No one's ever going to see it. I don't think I ever want to see it again. It's so awful. And I ended up on this site called Critique Circle where authors can submit their chapters and other people can read it. And I submitted this book, and within like 1 to 2 weeks of submitting chapters of this book, it became very clear to me that nobody liked this. Mm-hmm. It was truly as horrible as I thought it was. But everyone kept saying, you know, you're so great at witty dialogue and you're so great at the banter between your characters. And I thought, okay, you know what? I'm just going to throw this whole book away. mm-hmm. and I'm going to start a new one, and I'm going to write a contemporary romance. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to world build, you don't have to create like anything, you know, sci-fi or fantasy based. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe the main characters are separated. So there's just a ton of witty dialogue and back and forth and over the phone stuff, because I know I'm really good at that. Mm-hmm. So I sat down and I started writing the Happy Ever After playlist. And I knew that I wanted my main character to find a dog. There was this video that was going around at the time of this guy who was dog sitting for his buddy's dog. And he sent his buddy this video of him playing with the dog and doing all this fun stuff with him. Like, the dog is sitting in a little bucket and he's like giving him a bath with the hose and he's putting his hair in a mohawk. And then, you know, he's playing fetch with the dog on the lawn, and now the dog's sleeping with him in his bed. And I thought, how freaking cute is this video? What if there was this woman who found this dog and did the same thing, like sent the guy that she was talking to this video, you know, of her like playing with the dog, but they've never met, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you know, so what is he doing that he's not home and they're spending weeks apart and they haven't met each other yet? And I thought it'd be really fun if he was a musician. There's a lot of musicians in my family. Mm-hmm. My husband plays the guitar. His dad is a musician. My daughter, my oldest daughter, Naomi, is a musician. She actually plays four different instruments and she sings. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, that'd be really easy for me to write that kind of musician world. Mm-hmm. So I decided to make him a musician. And then I decided that I wanted the main character to be someone who worked from home. So she had a ton of time to be on the phone and to be with this dog that she finds. Mm-hmm. And I decided that I wanted her to be grieving. And it wasn't until, honestly, it wasn't until a few months ago that I sat down to write the author's note for the Happy Ever After playlist that I realized like why I wrote this character the way that I did. And the reason why is because many, many years ago, I had a friend who lost her husband. Mm-hmm. And it was this childhood friend that I grew up with, and we lost touch with each other. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, 6 years after we lost touch, she contacted me and we immediately, you know, like became friends again. And she was 2 years, after the accident that killed her husband. Mm. And it was kind of like this sharp juxtaposition to me, because she had always been this very functional person, like this very successful functional person. And here I am coming in, just like we're coming in into Sloan's story 2 years after the tragic loss of her fiance. And she's just this completely different person. She's like this shell of herself. And I tried for a really long time to pull my friend out of that cycle of grief. I tried for a really long time to, you know, help her out of this. It's almost like a, like an arrested development. Okay. Like this continuous loop of like, you know, just, I don't want to call it dysfunction, but just sadness, this continuous loop of sadness. Mm-hmm. And I was unsuccessful in pulling my friend out of that loop. And it was confusing. It was difficult to watch. I felt very helpless, very much the way that Kristen must have felt watching Sloan, you know, mm-hmm. not be the person that she used to be before Brandon's death. And when I wrote the Happy Ever After playlist, that was really me saving my friend because I couldn't save my friend in real life. And the very first thing that, you know, that I did was I had to knock Sloan out of that cycle of grief. I had to knock her out of the orbit that she was in. And the thing that I used to knock her out of that orbit was this dog. Mm-hmm. Tucker comes in, he's a retriever, and he retrieves her. He pulls her out of this cycle and gets her started back onto the path of healing. Mm-hmm. And it's, that path is not ever straightforward. It's not an instant fix by any stretch of the imagination. You have two steps forward and two steps back. And that's really what the Happy Ever After playlist is Sloan finding herself again, you know, becoming the person that she was prior to the accident. So, and I didn't even know what the name of this grief was until a beta reader was reading the Happy Ever After playlist. And she's like, gosh, you did such a great job with the complicated grief. Mm-hmm. And I Googled it. I was like, complicated grief? What's that? And I like Googled it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. Like, this is the thing that I saw. I was writing this thing that I had observed without actually even knowing what it was or even knowing that it had a name. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of this cathartic exercise for me. And I write about this in my author's note at the end. And my friend is doing very well now. She's, you know, she's pulled herself out of the cycle and she's, mm-hmm. you know, happy and she's living her life, but it really did take a very long time for that to happen. And you know, it was cathartic for me to be able to do that for Sloan when I couldn't do it for my friend in real life. Mm-hmm. So I wrote this book, I wrote the Happy Ever After playlist, and it got rave reviews on Critique Circle, like rave reviews. Mm-hmm. And it encouraged me to query an agent. And I queried an agent with this book, and I ended up getting my agent on my very first query. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, she loved it. So when we were in submissions, which is where you're pitching the book to publishers, mm-hmm. I told my agent, you know, what do you think about me going back in time and writing maybe Kristen and Josh's love story so we can live through the events that make Sloan who she is in the Happy Ever After playlist? And my agent was like, oh, that'd be awesome. Do it. So I started writing The Friend Zone, and I actually was writing it almost like in my mind. I was like, this is going to be a novella. It's just going to be like bonus material for the Happy Ever After playlist. It's not going to be its own book. It's just going to be like, hey, this is like who Sloan was before Brandon's death. And it ended up being its own book. Like it just kind of wrote itself. Like it just flew out of me. 3 months I wrote The Friend Zone. And, you know, there's a lot of people who read The Friend Zone and they're like, that death was completely unnecessary. Well, you guys are just going to have to forgive me because Brandon was already dead before even I met him. He was always dead. He was, you know, that book was the whole purpose of that book was to get us to the Happy Ever After playlist, was to set us up for what happens in book two. So it was very weird meeting him. It was very weird having to sit down and write Brandon, you know, knowing that like, I've got to kill this man. Mm-hmm. But I think that The Friend Zone gives so much more depth to the Happy Ever After playlist. I think that it's so important that you read that book first and then read the Happy Ever After playlist next so you truly understand what Sloan has been through, mm-hmm. and how she got to where she is. And I think they are wonderful companions to each other.
Yeah, I think they're books that you can read standalone. I feel like for us to get the whole story and to get the death and to get the butterflies in your stomach when you're reading the Happy Ever After, you kind of need to learn what makes Sloan tick, like what happened to her to get to that place where she's at. And so The Friend Zone provides you with that, along with a great love story that still deals with some real life issues. So it was just, I think for me, it just, they came together perfectly. Like I read The Friend Zone a few months apart, and I want to reread them again. And I want to reread them back to back so then I can get the full story again.
And there's so many amazing Easter eggs between the two books that mm-hmm. like for example, I mention in The Friend Zone during the karaoke chapter that there's a poorly sung Lola Simone song on the radio, or that's mm-hmm. what someone's singing. They're singing a poorly sung Lola Simone song. Lola Simone is the villain in the Happy Ever After playlist. And little bit of insider info, Lola Simone is the name of my best friend's dog. Oh. And I just liked it. I thought it was like a cool rock star name. So I was like, yeah, I'll name my character Lola Simone. And like, you know, in The Friend Zone, for example, when Kristen shows up to tell Sloan that Brandon's been in an accident, she notes that there's freshly watered porch plants on the porch. Okay. Mm-hmm. And in the Happy Ever After playlist, those porch plants are still there, but they're dead. You know, like there's just so many little tidbits from one book to the next, you know, that really are just woven into the storyline. I love Easter eggs. It's my favorite thing. So I put a lot of them in my books, a lot. And in fact, in The Friend Zone, Josh or Kristen, when she's thinking about, you know, all the things that she knows about Josh, she thinks that she knows that Josh wants to build a crib from the wood around the home, around his grandparents' house. Okay, mm-hmm. in South Dakota. Well, that's the house that book number three is based in. Oh. So there's little tidbits that you know, and actually in book number three, we get to find out why Josh is a carpenter, because carpentry was handed down all throughout Josh's history. Like going back five generations, all the men have been carpenters. Mm-hmm. And so that's why Josh is a carpenter, because his grandfather taught him the way that his grandfather's grandfather taught him. And the main character in book number three is a carpenter himself. Mm. So I love Easter eggs, and it's all woven together. And if you love, you know, stories that all connect to each other, then you'll love all the books,
Yes, I'm a series junkie. So anytime you give me a whirl and you give me a sequel and you give me another sequel and you give me Easter eggs and you give me side characters that grow and fall in love, I'm all about it. So I love it.
Yeah. And in book three, we don't get any Kristen and Josh. We get a few Josh mentions in book three, but in book four, we get full on cameos of all the characters from the previous books. We get to see Sloane and Jason. We get to see Kristen and Josh, and we get to see Chris and Claire from book number three. So I'm having so much fun writing book number four right now because the whole band is together again.
Gosh. Okay. So thank you for setting the expectations of book three. So letting us know that we have to look forward for book four to get updates about the side characters of previous books. So I'm excited to read both books for sure. So the friendship between Kristen and Sloane, you based it in real life. What was something, why create a friendship that was so strong? Because they help each other. They had each other's back. They supported no matter what. Kristen was, you know, helping Sloane getting out of the grief. And then Sloane was helping Kristen, you know, dealing with the infertility issues. Like, it just, there's like so much stuff about that. That was like, that's the relationship that I admired the most out of the books. I love the romance and the heroes are great, but I think the relationship between Kristen and Sloane was such a rock solid relationship that it was just like, it's friendship goals and squad goals to have. What inspired you to build that relationship so strong?
Well, the friendship is very much based on my real life friendship with my real life best friend, Lindsay. So, you know, they say that your first book is always a little autobiographical. I'm probably saying that wrong, where the book is almost a little bit like you're writing about yourself. And I very much am a Sloane, very, very much. I have a nervous eye twitch that drives me absolutely insane. That my eyelid twitched for 6 months around the opening or around the publishing of my first book. It drove me absolutely bonkers. You know, it's like I wrote a lot of myself into Sloane. A lot of the way that Sloane deals with life or, you know, deals with situations is very much the way that I deal with life and situations. You know, I talked a little bit about how I have to be kind of like physically forced into making risky decisions. Well, Sloane is very much the same way. And luckily she meets a man who is really, really good at convincing her to do things. So when I sat down to write The Friend Zone, it just made sense to me that Kristen, in following on with, you know, the real life theme of my own best friend, would struggle with infertility, because my best, the infertility in The Friend Zone is almost word for word exactly what happened to my best friend. My best friend has 2 children that she was able to conceive naturally and without intervention before the deteriorating state of her uterus made it impossible for her to have any more. She had a partial hysterectomy due to severe uterine fibroids, and I described it in the book exactly as she described it to me. And then a year after she lost her uterus, she lost her ovaries as well. So by the age of 29, my best friend had a full hysterectomy. And that's why that storyline feels authentic, because it is. And that's why the friendship feels authentic, because it is. Like, I pretty much wrote those two characters. Now, granted, like, obviously the love stories in both books are fiction, but the way that those characters react to what's happening in those love stories is exactly how me and my best friend would react and how we would interact with each other. So it's a very natural feeling friendship because it's very much based on real life. And Lindsay is always pranking me all the freaking time. She has sent me a glitter bomb. She has sent me a ton of weird stuff. She sent me a gift once that I literally almost called the police. Like, I was that freaking scared when she sent me this thing. It was from this company called the Mystery Package Company. And like, they send you like these, it's supposed to be like an experience. Okay. It's like sort of like The Game with Michael Douglas, only like very small and like, so she sent me this package and it's like in this wooden crate. Okay. And I open it up and it's a handwritten letter, and the letter is handwritten in cursive. And I'm here to tell you, there is absolutely nothing in this entire universe more scary than a handwritten letter in cursive. Okay. Like, who writes handwritten letters in cursive, if not like serial killers? Okay. Like, that was just so freaky to me. And the letter was like, "I finally found you." And I was like, "Oh no, we're done. We're done." I'm like, "Okay, what is this?" And the company actually tells you when you purchase this particular experience that you need to notify somebody else in the home that this is coming, because people have called the police. And my husband, thank God, was like, you know, right there, like he knew what was happening. And I was so freaked out. He had to, like, I was literally like, I was scared. Okay. Because like, I've got a very public persona, you know, like there's a lot of people that follow me. Like my, you know, my world is out there in the internet. And like, I was like, oh my gosh, it's finally happened. I have like a stalker who's found my house and he sent me something in this wooden box and written a letter in cursive. So anyway, my husband was like, no, it's from Lindsay. And then I like burst into like nervous manic laughter because I realized that I wasn't getting stalked by somebody who wanted to like wear my skin. And it was honestly one of the best gifts I've ever received because of the emotional roller coaster it took me on. But anyway, she sends me weird stuff all the time. And I wrote in the friend zone that, you know, Kristen sends Sloan a potato, mm-hmm. potato gram that says like, yep. congratulations, you know. And the funny thing is Lindsay had never sent me a potato gram before. It was just kind of Lindsay thing to do that I knew, you know, was like right up her alley, even though I had never received a potato from Lindsay. Okay. And when I got my book deal, she called me and she was like, so I sent you this thing and I'm kind of wondering why I sent it to you now, 'cause it feels really stupid. And she's like, I don't know. I it's really dumb. I'm sorry. And I get it. And it's a potato gram that says, congratulations on your book deal. And I was like, you did it. And she had not read the book. Like reading the friend zone was really difficult for her, obviously, because her infertility struggle was something very personal to her. And it was an extremely difficult time in her life. Mm-hmm. So she really had a hard time sitting down and reading the book. She didn't read the book until, gosh, I think like a couple months after it came out, even though it was largely based on her own, you know, infertility story. Mm-hmm. So she didn't know that potato gram was in the book, and she sent me one. And I was just like, this is the most perfect thing ever. Like, it's just a testament to how well I wrote her, you know, because I knew exactly what she would do. It was perfect, honestly.
That sounds like the perfect gift. It was like perfect alignment. Like you just know, like, okay, like this will happen. I'm just going to manifest. And you just manifested a potato gram. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's just very random. And I think like potatogram.com probably had like a massive influx of potato gifts after this book came out, because so many of my readers are like, oh, I sent my best friend a potato gram. Thanks for the idea. I've got a lot of ideas, you guys. A lot of ideas.
I love it. You should try to be like, I'm going to be an affiliate. I mentioned in my book, just give me the affiliate deal. So.
Yeah, I'm sending Lindsay. We're always doing funny stuff to each other. And it's very much like the friendship in the books. Mm-hmm. And I'm sending her for her birthday a box that explodes. Like you open it up and it's like, bling, and like butterflies fly out of it and like glitter flies out of it. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah, so that's what she's getting for her birthday.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. You got friendship goals, I had to tell you. So I love it. Now let's get to random book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with the audience what they should read next. So what is your favorite genre?
Oh my gosh. See, I would like to say that my favorite genre is romance, but actually lately what I've been reading a ton of is like real life stories. Like I just finished Me by Elton John. Oh gosh, there was another one. They Were Her Property. That was a very fascinating book about slavery in the antebellum times. So that was a really good read. I read The Scarlet Letters by Jenny Nordback. And I have to say that was probably one of my favorite reads of the whole year. And it's, yeah, honestly, it was really good. Like I'm like scratching, like, you got any more of that autobiography, Jenny? Like it was so good. It's a true story. And it was her, recounting her, the year she spent as a dominatrix in LA's oldest sex dungeon. And like, I didn't know anything about like dominatrixes. Like, I mean, like, you know, like what you see on TV, right? But like, it was fascinating, like absolutely fascinating, very well written, probably one of my favorite books of the year. And I got it on audiobook and she narrates it herself, which is extra cool. Mm-hmm. Let's see. For romance, I have read a ton of romance this year. Let's see, Fixer Up by Tessa Bailey was one that I really enjoyed. That's just like a soup. Tessa Bailey's stuff is like super steamy.
Yes, it is.
Very, very steamy. I love it. Meet Cute by Helena Hunting was really, really good. She's a very funny writer. If you like, like comedy and if you like to laugh while you're reading, she's a really great author to follow. Also very steamy read. Mm-hmm. Let's see, what else was there? Oh gosh, I read so much, and I mostly read on audiobook. I love audiobooks. I get a lot of requests to blurb books, and if I can't get an audiobook, it's really hard for me to do because I can't like dedicate my eyeballs to sitting in one spot and reading most of the time. Oh, The Boyfriend Project by Ferreira. I'm going to probably say her last name. Roshan, I think that's how you say her last name.
Yeah.
That was a book that I got to read a super early advanced copy of that I actually read with my eyeballs, which Ferreira, that's a big compliment, lady, because I don't got time for that. And I did because it was amazing. And my editor was like, you have to read this book. She's like, just read the first 50 pages. And if you're not feeling it, you don't have to keep reading. And I like devoured that book. I read that book in like a day, which is super speedy for me. I'm not like one of those readers that can read a book in a day. That was a really, really good one. If you love romance and you want like a contemporary real world, you know, women living in the now type book, The Boyfriend Project was amazing. Loved that one. And I think it's coming out in June.
Yeah
it's coming out in June.
Yeah, I'm looking forward.
Yes, really, really like that.
That's awesome. Thank you for the book recommendation. So tell us where we can find you online.
So I'm in all the places. I am on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and it's Author Abby Jimenez. On Twitter, it's Author Abby Jim. And yeah, follow me. It's super fun. If you've read The Friend Zone already, join me in my discussion group because there's a ton of exclusive giveaways that I do in there for my readers that I don't do anywhere else. Mm-hmm. I actually had a program that I'm probably going to do for the third book as well. I called it my traveling ARC program. Mm-hmm. And what I did is I released 5 advanced reader copies of the Happy Ever After playlist into my group and they share it. So if you're in the group, you have a really good chance, like a really good shot at reading some of my books before they come out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was super fun. You know, people are building friendships in my group. You know, they're sending the book to someone they've never met before and they're sending them treats and snacks with it and they're becoming friends online. And it's just really fun. It's a very welcoming and lighthearted group. So join me there because you'll get a lot of engagement from me there.
Thank you. Thank you, Abby, for being on the show.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It was really fun.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadingnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.